You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Spring training is right around the corner, and as is the case every year, every team is welcoming some new players and new faces to their spring training sites. I'm Allison Footer from MLB.com, and in Philadelphia, of course, there's going to be an entirely new rotation, and Vince Velasquez is a favorite to make that rotation after the Phillies' big trade with the Astros. In Miami, they have Wei-Yin Chen, who is going to be an anchor in that rotation. And in Atlanta, a new infield, and Ender Inciarte is a big part of that. So that's a quick look. Plus, there are a couple of newsworthy items coming out of this division, so let's take a listen. Wayne, thanks for being with us. We're doing a little get-to-know-you segment for this week's podcast, and we want to talk a little bit about Ezrubel Cabrera, who is going to be the new shortstop. So what was your reaction when they obtained him, and did you find that this was going to be an upgrade?
Yeah, I think the Mets, in a lot of ways, needed to get a little bit more athletic up the middle, and I think they've done that. You know, Daniel Murphy and Wilmer Flores were the primary double play team last year, with Murphy playing second and Flores at short. And there were a lot of times when they just, you know, double plays weren't turned, balls weren't gotten to up the middle or in the hole. And I think although Cabrera is not the best defensive shortstop either, I think he is an upgrade from what the Mets had last year. And again, just a team trying to get a little more athletic in the middle of the field. And I think Cabrera does bring that to the table.
Yeah, he's a very consistent player. He's played in at least 135 games his last 5 years. In today's game, durability is a huge factor. You hear that being talked about a lot. Just like look how many games you guys have played in these last few years. Keeping guys on the field seems to be a challenge these days. So that had to have been a selling point, I guess, for the Mets.
Yeah, it is, and it's something that the Mets are concerned about with Ruben Tejada having gotten injured, of course, in the playoffs last year, and Wilmer Flores suffering an injury in winter ball this year. So they certainly need people that are going to be on the field and feel like that they can get some reliability out of Ezrubel Cabrera. I also think that, you know, you're getting a guy who does have some power and who's been to the All-Star game a couple of times. I mean, this is a guy that's really proven himself over the last few years and, you know, is somebody that the Mets can rely on while they kind of work on their own system. And Amed Rosario, a young shortstop in their farm system, they're very excited about. So if you look at Cabrera getting a two-year deal, kind of lines up with when they think Amed Rosario might be available.
Yeah, so the last four seasons, we do want to say Cabrera with his home runs, 16 home runs, 14, 14, and 15. So, yeah, you're talking about a pretty consistent guy. A new double play combination, that's always, I think, interesting to people to watch, just how everybody sort of bands together and works together. They're both switch hitters. We're talking about Neil Walker, of course, being a new second baseman, both 30 years old. I guess that's what spring training is for, right, with these guys working together. Does it take time for double play combinations and infielders to sort of get in a rhythm together?
It doesn't hurt to have continuity in those positions. I think the longer you play with somebody, the more familiar that you're going to be with their routines and what they do and where they like to throw. But, you know, I think ultimately these two guys are veterans. You know, Cabrera has been around. So has Neil Walker. They haven't played directly with each other, but they've played with so many different double play combination partners over the years that I don't think it should take very long for these two in particular to get their routines down. And you know, by the time the regular season begins, I think they'll have a pretty good understanding of what one needs from the other.
Bill, before we get to know some of these players, let's talk about Yoenis Cespedes. This has been an ongoing thing throughout the offseason. Everybody's waiting to see who signs him. Looks like the Nationals might be interested. What are you hearing?
Yes, they are interested. But before they can even think about signing Cespedes, they have to really think about what they have to do with Jason Worth, because Jason Worth has two more years left on his contract, and he's going to make $42 million. I don't see any other team willing to take that on unless the Nationals, give them the cash for it. That's the only way I see that happening. And also, too, Jason Worth is 36 years old. And I spoke to him late last year, And he said he's far from done. He still believes he can play every day. And it'll be interesting what they do, especially when they get Cespedes, if they're able to get Cespedes, because, you know, obviously he's the best candidate to play center field. And they recently picked up Ben Revere, and he's going to have to possibly move to left field. He doesn't have an outfield arm at all. So it's going to be interesting to see how the Nationals are able to pull this off.
Yeah, and so that's the thing about waiting this long before spring training starts. It's not so much that Cespedes isn't a valuable player, a very good player, but, I mean, teams have a roster set, and it's not like, he's just going to be, you know, a fifth outfielder or a guy off the bench. Consider. I mean, you really have to figure out what you're going to do there. And like you said, I mean, they would almost have to be guaranteed to be able to move someone before they would even be able to bring him on, right? They'd have to have, like, dual deals going on?
Correct. I don't think, knowing Mike Rizzo takes his time, and I can see him wait maybe till spring training, if he thought of this, to try to trade Jason Worth. But, I find it hard to believe for a guy that's going to be making $42 million the next 2 years, I find it hard to believe he's going to accept the bench role. And to me, you have to think about this. He's going to have to be paid, I believe, to get traded, because he has a full no-trade clause. So this is going to be interesting.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting how they're able to get this deal done if they can.
Yeah, and especially since, I mean, as sour as the national season is, sour of a note as the national season ended on last year, as you know, it was not any fun to be around that club for the end of the season. But that is the Nationals would be a very tough thing for me to do if I'm Jason Worth, is to agree to leave, because he's got a great chance to get a World Series ring there. It's not like you're going to, depending on who would want him, but the situation I can't imagine would be better than his situation in Washington.
Yes, and you know what. You know, I have so much respect for Jason Worth. This is a guy who turned that clubhouse around. Allison, I mean, I'm sure you know. But
right.
before he came, it was one of the worst clubhouses around. It really was. You had to walk on eggshells. And then when Jason Worth came, he turned it around. You know, like, I've always called him the unofficial team captain, because he put a lot of people in their places, and in terms of the players, his teammates. And, to me, I enjoy covering Jason Worth. I have nothing but good things to say about him.
Yeah. Well, we'll keep our eye on that. Certainly the Mets have to start feeling a little bit uncomfortable if they think the Nationals might actually be interested in Cespedes, but we will just keep monitoring that. Meanwhile, we want to move on to our Getting to Know You segment, which is the theme of this week's podcast. And let's talk about Ben Revere, since we've already mentioned him. So this is a really good acquisition. I think when that trade came down, where the Jays and the Nationals, it was Ben Revere and Drew Storen. Everyone seemed to like this deal for both teams. So what are the Nationals getting in Ben Revere?
Well, without question, they're getting their leadoff hitter. After losing Denard Span, Revere will be their leadoff hitter. Dusty Baker made that announcement the other day. Also, as of right now, he's going to be playing center field. Now, keep in mind, the only drawback is his defense. I mean, he doesn't have an arm whatsoever. And, and he has problems with balls going over his head. So, and this is what a scout told me about him. So, I think, he's going to be dealing with people like Davey Lopes, Jock Jones. And as, Dusty Baker pointed out to me, those guys are going to help Ben Revere become a better outfielder. Hopefully that's the case. But the bottom line is he's going to be their leadoff hitter, and from what I understand, his offense makes up for the defense.
Yeah, so 27 years old, and for the reason that you just said, then that would explain why he's been with a couple of different teams, because he certainly has so much talent. But that's a big deal. I mean, and they are gaining a left-handed bat, so that's definitely more upside. But the defense, I mean, that's a serious thing. I guess that's what he'll be spending most of spring training working through.
Yes, no question about it. And But you know what, though? I think you said it earlier, he really balances his lineup. You add Daniel Murphy to the mix, and you have three left-handed hitters in that starting lineup, including Bryce Harper. And I think offensively they've improved dramatically, no question about it. I think you're not going to have a lot of strikeouts like you had the last two or three years. I mean, you take Daniel Murphy, you take and you minus Ian Desmond, your strikeouts are going to go down. You want to have a better on-base percentage, maybe with Revere. So that really helps the offense big time.
Before we get into spring training, though, Mark, let's talk about one of the Braves coaches. So Eddie Perez managing in winter ball in Venezuela. So some news that came out of there. What's going on with him?
Yeah, it's fun to see Eddie Perez has guided his team to the Venezuelan League Championship Series there. I have the best of seven series there with the Tigres de Aruba, I think is a better way to say that. They will have a chance to. This team has a rich tradition. It's the team that he grew up watching, you know, during his childhood down there, and it's just a great thrill for him that his first year as their manager, he's guided them to the playoffs. So here's a guy who he has a. You know, for a long time, best known as Greg Maddux's, you know, personal catcher. You know, he caught more games from Greg Maddux than anybody else. And then when Javi Lopez got hurt there in 1999, all of a sudden, surprisingly, Eddie Perez steps up and is the NLCS MVP that year, helped the Braves get to the World Series. And he's been a coach here in Atlanta since 2007. You have to think there will come a time where he may get a chance to manage the big league level. And this certainly enhances his resume.
You know, it's funny because I remember talking to some of the Venezuelan and Dominican players when I was covering the Astros. I remember talking to Raul Chavez right in the middle of the NLCS in 2004, and they were taking batting practice in St. Louis. And I don't know that there was any more pressure that I've ever seen on a team before. And he said, "This is nothing compared to what we go through during the playoffs and winter ball." He said it is so intense and it is so stressful because people are really mad if you don't win. And I don't know that we can really appreciate exactly just how passionate it is during that time.
No, I don't think so. I think you even had a great experience. It wasn't necessarily the competition, but just when you went to Puerto Rico last year, I think it is important for us to go and, you know, get a taste of where, you know, what some of these players do experience, you know, on the road to the United States, because it is a completely different culture, you know, and the games are a little bit different. The reactions to the wins and losses, certainly, we've heard that time and time again, like you said, are different. Yes, the fans are here are passionate in the United States, but it's a different kind of passion, I guess, is the best way to describe it. And you know, I think, you know, just even going to, I don't know, had you gone to Puerto Rico before when the Expos were playing there?
No, that's my first time. It was last week.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I realize it feels a lot like the U.S. there, and it wasn't the competitive atmosphere you were seeing, but it was cool to see kind of where some of these players are coming from. It allows you to understand the story a little bit better, I would think.
Absolutely, and the thing about these winter ball games is it feels, I mean, from what I understand, it's more like football as far as the fans being engaged. Like, we sit there and we eat some popcorn, we chit-chat with our friends, we take in a ball game. But in these situations, it's people are on their feet, they're yelling and screaming and cheering the whole time, and it's very cool. So let's move on to – so we're getting to know some of the players right now. So we have a special little segment that we've titled Getting to Know You, because we're very original. And so let's get to know Ender Inciarte, who, of course, is – one of the big pieces that they got back in the trade for Shelby Miller, and 25 years old. And I find it, you know, kind of funny that the Braves are still getting calls about him. So they have said, like, they don't want to move him, obviously, but everybody wants him. So that's a pretty good situation for the Braves to be in.
Yeah. I mean, it's you know, even I think we've talked about this before, even before the Braves landed Inciarte, the Indians were coming hard for him, and there was some thought that maybe the Braves could flip him right away. You know, John Coppola kind of fueled that the night of the trade when he told us, you know, 2 hours after the trade was completed, basically said, "Hey, look, 10 teams have already called about him." Well, you know, you don't. Yeah, I'm sorry, but you've just thrown some gasoline on that story. And like you said, there's still some sparks to it. I you know, my opinion is he still sticks around. You know, here's a talented outfielder who can run. He can, you know, he's got a good arm. Very versatile in the outfield. He's to give you gold caliber, gold glove caliber defense. And he's still very young in his career. The Phillies drafted him in the Rule 5 draft in 2012. He made their 2013 opening day roster. The second day of the regular season, I think they tried to slip it through, maybe hoping that the Diamondbacks wouldn't want him back. But the Diamondbacks did take him back because the Phillies were not ready to carry him on their roster for that entire season. So that was probably best for Enciarte. Instead of sitting on Philadelphia's bench most of that season, he continued his development at the Double A level there with the Diamondbacks, and then burst on the scene in 2014, had some success, and as we know, he truly made a name for himself this year, where with once again showing good, strong defense and some consistency at the plate. You know, he proved that he can get 25 to 30 stolen bases. So, hey, I think the Braves have realized they have something special, and the fact that they can control him for the next 5 years, I think they would have to get a really, really strong return to give up on him right now.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even see where – I mean, how – I don't think that there could be a strong return. I mean, everyday center fielder, leadoff hitter, slash line last year was 303, 338, 408. And like you said, like, he's arbitration eligible in 17, and then – the club controls until 21. I mean, at some point, I guess the Braves are really in a situation, though, where they never can think, okay, we're done, and now we like what we've got to be. I know they want to realistically start winning in, like, maybe just two more seasons, but this is a guy that you can kind of build around, not so much get rid of to get more.
Yeah, I mean, I think you said it right away. We're leadoff hitter and center fielder, those are not pieces that are easy to find. This guy fills
right.
Two needs. At the same time, if you do have Malik Smith, one of your prospects, if he becomes major league ready within the next first few months of the season or even early next year, all of a sudden you move Enciarte to right. You make a decision about Nick Markakis. Markakis will tell you a little bit about where he stands coming back from his second year back from neck surgery this year. You'll get a better feel. But you know, don't give up on a piece like this, because not only does he immediately strengthen you, but he also provides some versatility that strengthens your depth for many years to come.
Joe, really, D. Gordon, I mean, there was a lot of speculation just throughout the offseason. Are they going to lock him up? And then they did. And that's going to be really nice for them to know that that he's going to be sort of anchoring that lineup, top of the lineup, and with so many skills that he has, to have him in the fold has to be a good thing.
Yeah, Allison, it's a good signal. And, you know, when you come into the off season, all organizations kind of have their checklists and their priorities. And D. Gordon was the guy that they wanted to extend, their own. He's the guy that they targeted to get a long-term deal done with. There was mutual interest. He expressed late last year that he, you know, really liked it here, was very much open to the contract. But as you know, these things take time and sometimes don't always work out. So, you know, you had two sides wanting it to happen, and their top internal off-season priority was met with the signing, which seems that both kind of got what they wanted. He got the security for 5 years, and the Marlins structured it in such a way, 5 years, $50 million, that, you know, it didn't prohibit them from addressing other needs. But, you know, this team, Allison, as you know, has gone through so much in terms of turnover of players and getting guys to buy in has been difficult if they don't feel that they're part of a long-term vision, and especially when they see guys sign and get traded 2 or 3 months into the season in the first year of those contracts. So the more they can, you know, establish that core, now you have Stanton long-term, you have Yelich long-term, you have D. Gordon long-term. Those are three really nice core pieces that you've got to build around for the next 4, 5, 6 years. So a very good off-season move and well-deserved for D. Gordon, who clearly was the energy and the inspiration of 2015.
Yeah, so we're spending our podcast time, part of it, talking about sort of a getting to know you segment on somebody who the fans may not know very well. So that brings me into another five-year contract that was just signed, and that's Weihan Chen, who is really going to be a nice addition, it looks like, to this pitching staff. 30 years old. It's the richest contract Marlins have ever given to a pitcher. So when I saw them announce the signing, I thought, you know, this is a team that I think is going to be pretty good. I also said last year that they were going to be sneaky good, so take that with a grain of salt. But I just see so much potential for this rotation. What does he do just for the whole look of this rotation?
Yeah, and Allison, as I touched on, the top offseason priority internally was getting, you know, he signed. They signaled their highest priority was getting a number two caliber starting pitcher to sit behind Jose Fernandez. As you know, there's a lot of pitching on the market this year. Some of it's very, very expensive. And, you know, the Marlins have always had that stance. They've always really been reluctant to go 5 years, $80 million on a pitcher or something even close to that. That's why the prices of the Greinke's, you know, those guys were never going to be on the Marlins checklist. But you always thought a guy like Cueto, but he went for about $120, $130 million. And you know, you thought guys like that, but that price was so high. And the fact that the Marlins budged to do this, for one, showed that an awareness that that's where the market is. And unless you're like the Mets have been this last couple of years that can develop their own young, all really good and cost, you know, friendly, the Marlins weren't in that spot. So they needed to kind of, you know, play with the big boys in the market, and they did. And getting Chen was a real coup, I thought, because I thought for that dollar figure plus the fact that he's got an opt-out after 2 years, there are a lot of other teams besides the Marlins that are looking for high-end starting pitching. He chose Miami. So they obviously put a good sales pitch. They put a really good offer on the table. They answered questions, but they signed a high-profile free agent who was represented by who? Scott Boris, who now represents three-fifths of the Marlins' rotation, along with Jose and Jared Cozart, and he also represents Marcelo Ozuna. So, you know, they showed they could do business with Boris. They showed the team that, you know, they meant business by getting that high-end starting pitcher. And, you know, they showed the league. And as you noted, now all of a sudden, 2 or 3 weeks ago, it was like, oh, well, you know, what would this year look like? Now it looks like it's going to be pretty competitive. And clearly, you know, with the Braves and the Phillies going in the direction they are, more retooling, there's opportunity to challenge for a playoff spot. And if the Marlins went that way, you would have had the NL East, just New York and Washington competing, which I think is really bad for baseball, all these teams that drop out before the season starts. So, you know, good sign by the Marlins to get Chen, a guy whose game should translate really well coming over to the National League from the AL East in more of a hitter's park. You know, not the dominant, you know, 98 mile an hour, but, you know, works both sides of the plate. He's, you know, it's all the things, the ins and out of pitching and getting guys out. And he was the guy they felt was the safest, and they got their guy.
Yeah, you bring up the Mets and the Nationals, and that's an important point because this is a very, very pitching-heavy division. And the Marlins clearly saw, like, you know, if they really – not that you – I mean, everybody has to have good pitching, but my goodness, I mean, you're talking about that young Mets rotation that really hasn't changed much since their playoff run. And then, of course, the Nationals, they've got Max Scherzer, and, I mean, things didn't work out for them last year, but you can never count them out. So they really have – they really had to go get a pitcher just to be able to kind of keep up.
Yeah, and Allison, this was big too because I always kind of thought this should have been the route they would go. You know, they've shown that they're not heavy free agent, you know, players, the Marlins. But this organization does not have that deep of talent because they gave, you know, they traded some of it away and they just haven't drafted or developed as well as they probably should have. So you couldn't really go and trade for that controllable guy. So, you know, the name that we heard all offseason, Marcelo Ozuna, their promising 25-year-old now outfielder, you know, he would have been dangled to bring in a number three, number two caliber guy. So you may have addressed pitching there, but you would have put a hole in the center field and created some shuffling that would have made some players uneasy in a platoon situation in one of your corner outfield spots, and as well as giving up a guy with 20-plus home run power, who's still, you know, not arbitration eligible. So that's another real plus to play in the free agent market, get a really good pitcher that's out there, and you know you don't cost you the your a second round or middle round pick, the compensatory pick. You know, you got rid of that, so I guess you save a little bit of money, you know, instead on your draft pool, you kind of apply that to Chen's contract in 16. But it made a lot of sense to go the free agent route, and, you know, just as someone that kind of monitors this, I thought that was probably their best plan of attack rather than, you know, take a big piece off your roster, move a core to address pitching.
Todd, first of all, before we can start spring training, there is the caravan season to get through, so a lot of teams are making their way around their respective areas and reaching out to fans and shaking hands, saying hello, and answering questions. So you're going to be at Lehigh Valley, which is the location of the Phillies AAA team, and the general manager will also be there. So this could be kind of an interesting, informative trip for you if there's anything left that the Phillies want to do.
I think they're mostly done, but, you know, there's always the possibility that they could go out and add another player, maybe a relief pitcher, maybe another starting pitcher just for depth purposes. You know, I was actually looking at their outfield situation, and they're actually pretty thin there. There's five guys I think you would say are heavy favorites to make the outfield, but if one of those guys goes down, suddenly they look a lot thinner, and they really don't have too many guys that can replace those guys. So I think there's a possibility maybe they go out and find an extra outfielder, like sign a guy to a minor league contract and just kind of keep him for depth purposes. But it's going to be interesting to see kind of what Matt Klentak has to say about the composition of the roster right now and his feelings kind of going into camp with, you know, less than a month to go before spring training.
Yeah, so that brings us to our Getting to Know You segment, which is our theme of this week's podcast. And the rotation is, of course, going to be a fascinating thing to look at throughout spring training. Number one, we want to talk about Vincent Velasquez. We have talked about him. Of course, I'm very familiar with him coming from the Houston side, and the Phillies obtained him in the Big Ken Giles trade. And Velasquez seems to be pretty good bet to be in that rotation. He's considered the centerpiece of that trade, correct?
Yeah, he was the guy for sure when the trade first broke. I think it might have been on a Tuesday night or a Wednesday night of the winter meetings that he was definitely the key piece. And that was the guy that immediately got back to me of, you know, of all the guys they were getting, they were very, very excited about his arm and his potential to kind of help solidify that rotation in the future.
Yeah, so he's 23 years old. He started 7 games for Houston last year. He made 12 relief appearances. The main thing is really just if he can stay healthy. So he had Tommy John surgery in 2011. He's had some things here and there. He missed a couple years ago with a strained groin. He's had missed time either during spring training or the regular season with things here and there. So I guess that's really, if there's anything that would be something to be cautious about, it would probably be just like, can he stay healthy?
Yeah, that seems to be the knock on him right now, if there's any knock at all, is his health and his ability to stay healthy. Obviously, I guess they are confident enough in his ability to stay healthy that they really kind of focused in on him and made him the centerpiece of that deal. But they seem to be pretty excited about him. You know, I talked to Pete McCannon this week at the ballpark. He had a little press conference during the beginning parts of this winter caravan that they're doing around the area. And he didn't come out and say Vincent Velasquez is the favorite for one of those jobs in the rotation, but he came about as close as he could to saying it. Jeremy Hellickson, Charlie Morton are two veterans that got in trades. They're locks. He essentially said Aaron Nola and Jared Eichhoff, who pitched well last year, they're locks. So they said, all right, well, who's the fifth guy? And Vincent Velasquez was the first guy that he mentioned. So they seem to be really, really high in him, and really high in him to the point that I think he is – I don't want to say it's his job to lose going into camp, but I think if he pitches well in spring training, I would be very, very surprised if he doesn't get it, unless somebody, you know, somebody unforeseen in camp just has an even better camp, like goes out there and makes 6 spring training starts and posts an ERA and under 1.5 or something like that.